Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr, sponsored by Modern Woodmen of America and Regional Director for Western Washington, Randy Verberg. The opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of this station. Here are your hosts, Bob and Ted.
But they are our opinions. Bob and Ted are happy to give their opinions. Each and every week, we try to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. And this week is no exception. I'm Bob Pittman. I'm here with my co-host, Ted Barr, and we're ready to take your calls at, what's the number, Ted? I should know it, shouldn't I?
1-866-485-1590, which is the call letters of the station, so I might add.
866-485-1590.
And guess what?
Uh-oh.
We now have our website set up.
Oh, that's right. And it looks
good.
Our
email address.
It looks good.
And our Twitter account.
And that's fun.
So you can email us your questions anytime during the show or during the week, which
right.
we really like because then we can do a little research if we need to. And our email address is questions@legallinetalk.com.
And so the website is actually legallinetalk.com.
Right. www.legallinetalk.com is the website. And then for email questions, it's questions@legallinetalk.com or by Twitter.
Right.
@legallinetalk.
You get to tweet us.
And anytime, day or night, they can visit the website, especially if you're having a little trouble getting to sleep at night,
yeah.
go to our website and you will be asleep within a matter of minutes.
Oh,
that's because Bob writes the website. Hey, you know, when you were talking earlier about our legal opinions, let me just say that Ted's legal opinions are based on decades of experience, hours of research, and many, many weeks and months in the courtroom, whereas Bob's are usually based on watching reruns of Judge Judy.
Oh. Well, and, you know, kick in a few Perry Masons.
Yeah, little Boston legal.
Just a little bit, you know. I mean, it's all in there. You know, common sense is what we really like to talk about. And I know it. People laugh sometimes. They say, oh, yeah, common sense and the law. Good luck. But, you know, I've found over all the years that a lot of things do make sense from a common sense standpoint. Now, some don't. You can look at some of the laws, some of the cases, and we say, what on earth is going on? That there's no common sense here. But I think the majority of the time there is a thread of common sense, don't you think?
I hope so. You know, because some of our laws are created by legislative enactment.
And, of course, we know what happens there.
And then, of course, the courts don't actually create laws, but sometimes the way their job is to interpret them, but sometimes the way they interpret them, there are people that believe they are actually legislating.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that's true, especially when you get up into the the Court of Appeals, some, but mostly I guess the Supreme Court probably is where we find that, I guess.
Well, you know, we do want to encourage people to call in with their questions during the show because that's really why we're here, is to provide you with free legal advice. What a deal!
Anything goes. Any legal question, we want to talk about it with you.
And the other thing you need to know is whoever submits the best question during the week or during the show is eligible for a $50 gift card from a local merchant that supports our show. And we want to thank our ongoing merchant donor, that is Daniel's Broiler, for the $50 gift cards that they've provided us both today and in the past.
I think I'm ready to set up my office there.
Yeah, I love Daniel's. You know, they have three locations, South Lake Union, Leschi, and my personal favorite, Bellevue Place. I love the Bellevue Place Daniel's this time of year, Bob, because it's right across the street from Bellevue Square. So, you know, you can go there ahead of time, hit the happy hour, half-price hors d'oeuvres, then do your shopping, or go to shopping at Bellevue Square, and they have a late-night menu right across the street. So if you don't want to have to go home and cook, you just hit them on the way home.
You know, maybe we should actually do a program sometime from Daniel's Broiler.
That'd be a great idea.
Actually,
because they'd probably feed us while we're doing it.
That's what I was kind of thinking, you know, that we might be able to comment then on what we're eating. You know, we could go through two or three of the different steaks, you know.
Yeah, people would really like to hear that.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, you know, they do have a deal going right now where up until December 24th, when you buy $100 in gift cards
right.
for, you know, gifts for your friends and family over the holidays, then you get a $20 gift certificate for every $100 in gift cards. You get
really?
A $20 gift certificate for yourself. So that's like getting a 20% discount anytime you go to Daniel's.
Wow.
So that's a pretty good deal. So anyway.
That's almost too good.
We do want to thank Daniel's for their ongoing support. And if you phone in, tweet in, email in the best legal question today, we'll be glad to give you a $50 gift card to Daniel's.
Now, is it tweet or tweet? They're tweeting the twits. No. What is it that's happening? I'm still not quite there.
Yeah. We'll keep working on Bob on that
but
one.
We're looking forward to it.
Hey, before we go any further, and we do have some fun things to talk about in the show today, Bob, I have to keep reminding you of this. You got to give our disclaimer.
I know. And, you know, I'm a believer in everybody in the world having a disclaimer or limitation of damage clause. I mean, our hope here on the program is that one day everybody will present their limitation of damage clause to anybody they meet on the street before they start a conversation or get into any kind of a legal situation, you give your disclaimer, your limitation of damage clause. And we just hope that that'll be the case one day. And I know we're personally working on that, of course, you know,
Why don't you just give our disclaimer?
All right. Damages resulting from advice given on this program are strictly limited to what you paid for the advice, wouldn't you know it?
Which is zip.
That's true.
There you go.
That's true. But give us a call. What are the numbers again
one more
for
time.
People to ask their questions?
Absolutely. One more time. 1-866-485-1590 or email questions@legallinetalk.com.
But I would really like to see our first Twitter
question. And that's just @legallinetalk.
Okay, and I'm just not quite, I mean, I'm going to get there. Yeah. I'm going to work on on being able to tweet or twit.
Hey, before we get to this week's lawyer joke of the week, let's talk just a little bit about Modern Woodmen.
Oh,
because they have been sponsoring our show for quite some time.
You know, it's a terrific group, and I think if you're concerned at all about your financial well-being, you should be talking to the nice Modern Woodmen folks. They actually make house calls too. I shouldn't offer that, but I know they go out to people's houses, and I think they like to get a cookie or maybe a piece of cake or something when they go, a cup of coffee, but. You don't have to, but I think it's nice if you add that in. But it's a terrific group, seriously. Any kind of financial concern, they do an awful lot in the community because it is a nonprofit, essentially. They are in a fraternal organization. All their profits really go back into the communities. Millions of dollars a year flow back into the communities when you work with Modern Woodmen.
As you do as an estate planner.
That's right.
Now, see, here's where you and I differ, Bob, because you're saying – and when they come to your home,
yeah.
You should offer them a cookie or a glass
right.
of milk. Now, see, I say, I'm a DUI lawyer. So
yeah.
I say, when they come to your home, a cocktail, a martini, a really big glass of wine. So anyway, we thank Modern Woodmen for their ongoing sponsorship of our program. And this week's lawyer joke.
Uh-oh.
Three elderly, hard of hearing judges are playing golf.
What was that?
Three elderly, hard-of-hearing judges are playing golf. The first judge says, boy, it's windy. The second judge says, no, it isn't. It's Thursday. The third judge says, I am too. Let's get a beer.
Oh, jeez. I love it.
You like that joke?
Hey. That's one of the best ones I've heard. I like that one.
Well, it's short and sweet.
Like
but, you
one.
Know, it brings up an interesting question. You know, I kind of like the jokes to fit into something we're talking about today.
Sure.
And so that's why I stay up late nights writing them. Keep waiting for Leno to call me to ask me to be one of his
any
writers.
Day now.
But that's, yeah,
any
yeah.
day now.
Yeah, I'm really holding my breath on that one. But I do want to ask you this. You know, we were talking about elderly judges. What's the deal, Bob, on mandatory retirement ages for judges?
You know, that's a really good question. And when our Constitution was first formed and signed into existence way back when, I guess what – we became a state in, what, 1889. There was no limit. But in the 40s and then right into, as we crossed into 1950 or so, there was a, and we're going to try to be really kind, there was kind of a renegade judge who was 94 and causing all kinds of trouble, all kinds of trouble. And they said, you know, we need to get rid of this guy. He wouldn't retire, and he couldn't get voted out of office because everybody loved him so much in his area. And so they actually created Amendment 25 to the Washington State Constitution that said all judges of the Supreme Court and the Superior Court, those two, have to retire by age 75, and it's at the end of the year in which they turn 75, and that continues today.
Even if it's in the middle of their elected term.
Well, yes, even if it's the middle, because we have a good example right now of Justice Gary Alexander is leaving at the end of December because he turned 75 during this year.
Even though he had a couple more years to serve in his elected term.
That's right. Oh. So it's I personally think 75 is too young for a Supreme Court justice because it's
to be forced into retirement,
I
mean.
I really do.
Well, you know, the interesting about it is that they made this law so long ago, people weren't living as long, and we didn't have the drugs that we do now to keep them healthy and acute and all this other stuff, you know.
We're going to continue right here on Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr. And we're going to talk.
Way to go, Bob. You just jumped the gun totally.
Well, you know what I want to say is
go ahead.
Do you think, I mean, how much was the salary of the Supreme Court when they first started out? Do you want to venture
a month or a year?
A year. What was the annual salary for Supreme Court justices?
$10.
Well, that's... How about $4,000?
$4,000, geez.
Superior Court, $3,000.
Wow.
And some people say we should go back to that.
Some do. We'll come back and talk a little more about the judges and answer your questions on Legal Line.
If you want to get in on the conversation, it's toll-free from anywhere. 1-866-485-1590. Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr resumes after this.
You've walked this path many times before. It's a chance to think, especially about your future. How will you turn your retirement dreams into reality? Will you have enough gold for your golden years? Your choices for building funds for retirement can be complicated. Fortunately, you have a friend in the community who can help you make the right decisions. That's your Modern Woodmen agent. Your agent is a skilled professional who will listen to your needs and desires and then work with you to create a plan that uses the right financial products to achieve your retirement goals. Build a lasting professional relationship with a trusted financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Randy Verberg, Western Washington's Regional Director for Modern Woodmen in Puyallup, Washington. Call me today at 253-770-6019.
Get in touch with your agent today. Modern Woodmen of America, touching lives, securing futures.
We now return to Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr on Freedom 1590.
Well, I see someone did call in and want to know why judges were being paid so much. $4,000 a year.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, before we get back to talking about judges and mandatory retirement, I do see that we have some calls.
We do.
And one from Steve in Seattle.
Yep. Let's go to Steve right now. Hi, Steve. You're on Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr.
Hello. I called a few weeks ago about DUI.
Yes.
And I was asking about the different, you know, how to behave if you're going to be, you know, in a DUI situation. And essentially what you guys said was don't give them any evidence with which to build a case against you. So no breathalyzer, no field sobriety, none of that. But
no.
You did say that if once you go to jail, because you're going to go to jail if you refuse to do everything, you said you should take the breathalyzer when you're at jail. And I'm just curious how that helps you build a case for defense.
And let me just say one thing. Ted is kind of concerned. He wants to know if you're calling from the King County Jail.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead, Ted.
Okay. First of all, we need to distinguish, Steve, between the portable breath test, which is called the PBT, which is the one given on the side of the road, and the main breath test, which is called the BAC machine at the station.
Yeah, you were saying take the BAC, but not the PBT.
Right. You don't. You don't have to take the PBT on the side of the road. There's no penalty for not taking it.
Right.
And most of the time, almost all the time, even if you do take it, a good defense attorney can get it suppressed or thrown out.
Okay.
But it's better just not to take it, because
right.
then it gives the officer at least more evidence against you. Now, the BAC machine, you do want to take that test.
That's where I'm confused. I don't understand how that helps you build a case for me.
Well, here's the deal. Number one is, and I want to clarify this with you, Steve, that machine is at the station.
Right.
You mentioned the jail. The jail is a separate facility.
Okay.
So what I said is, you know, basically what's going to happen is when you refuse to take the field test, you refuse to take the portable breath test, you are going to be arrested. You are going to the station.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And but that's probably going to happen even if you do that stuff about 95% of the time.
Exactly.
So since you're going to the station anyway, why give them the field test and why give them the results of the portable breath test?
Right, right, right.
Now, once you get to the station, you want to take the breath test machine, that test. And there's a couple of reasons. One, in that instance, if you refuse the breath test, the penalties are more severe if you end up being convicted of the DUI.
Right.
It puts you in a higher penalty range. For example, if you take the breath test and it's your first DUI offense in 7 years and you get convicted of the DUI and having taken the breath test, all right,
mm-hmm.
you're going to lose your license for 90 days.
Right.
If you blow under a 1.5. Okay,
right.
But if you refuse the breath test, you're going to lose your license for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's
a big difference.
That's a big difference, and it's possible you'll even lose it for 2 years, depending upon what category you fall into. So the first thing is to minimize the damage. The second thing is this. A lot of times, not all the time, we're able to get the breath test thrown out or suppressed on a technical argument with respect to the administration of the test, how the machine has been calibrated, whether the solution has been changed within the last 60 days, technical arguments. If you refuse the breath test, those technical arguments are not available to your attorney to get the breath test suppressed.
I see. Okay.
Now, you mentioned the jail thing, just to follow up on this. Once you've completed the processing at the police station, taken the breath test, talked to the public defender, it's discretionary on the part of the officer as to whether you're released or whether you're booked.
Right.
Now, if you have prior offenses, if you have a bad attitude, you know, you're mouthing off, you're being combative, you're going to get booked.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're polite or cooperative, but that doesn't mean giving up your constitutional rights, most officers are going to give you a ride home or at least call a cab for you or let you call a friend. Now, with having said that, there are a few officers or troopers around who just every time they arrest somebody for DUI, they book them into jail.
Right.
But most of them, it's discretionary, and as long as you don't what we call flunk the attitude test,
right,
you're going to be released that night.
Excellent.
And I have found that in a few cases, if you refuse the breath test, it kind of bugs them and they book you. But most of the time, they know you're just exercising your rights. And as long as you say, look, officer, no offense, but I'll take the breath test, but beyond that, I'm not doing anything.
Perfect.
They understand. Because if they were arrested, that's what they would be doing.
Right, right.
Oh.
Which does happen once in a while.
Yeah.
May I make a comment just about lawyers in general? Because you guys seem to do a lot of self-deprecating humor.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
A few years ago, and I'll spare you the details, it was about 6 years ago, I had a criminal charge against me that involved self-defense with a firearm.
Okay.
I didn't shoot anybody or anything like that. But anyway, long story short, I am a believer in having a good attorney. Because I'll tell you, I don't know how many people are listening, you know, say, well, I don't want a lawyer. A lawyer's too expensive. I'll let the court defend me, whatever. Anyway, I got a really good lawyer, and it cost me a lot of money. But this guy made it so that, you know, the whole thing basically went away. So, you know, I would say a good attorney is worth every dime that you would have to pay him, you know, in a situation like that.
Well, it's very nice of you to say that, Steve.
Well, I think that's a fair comment, especially you get into the criminal area. It's really tough to go without an attorney, I think.
There's an old saying, Steve and Bob, that goes, equal justice under the law, how much justice can you afford?
Yeah, unfortunately.
But, you know, you pay for that experience, huh?
Hey,
I just say do whatever it takes to afford the good attorney, because it will make your life much, much better if you go that route. And, you know, when you look at who's in jail, the people that are in jail a lot of times are the ones that weren't willing to get good defense.
Or able.
Yeah.
But you know what the tough area is, you guys, is this. If you're well off, you can afford a top-notch attorney. If you are very financially challenged, you can get a public defender. Where it's difficult is the middle class, because they don't have so much money that they can afford a top-notch lawyer, but they can't qualify for the public defender.
And, of course, the public defenders are darn good often.
They are good. So. They're overworked and underpaid, they're very good. Well, thanks, Steve. We really appreciate you listening every week. This is obviously another you listened before, called in before. We thank you for your loyalty. We hope we answered your questions.
Great. You gave me a lot of good information. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve, for the call. And let's go right back to the phones, and let's talk next to Peter in Seattle. Hi, Peter. You're on Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure.
My question concerns treating corporations as people, which is one of the things people are sort of angry about that.
Sure.
I'm not sure exactly what that means legally, and I wonder if it's good or bad for ordinary people.
Yeah. Well, now, is there a context around this when you say treating them as a...
Well, for instance, I just read about how eBay and Amazon want to influence the laws on collecting sales tax.
Uh-huh.
Now, why should they influence... I mean, other people should influence the laws as much as they do, but it seems like they have so much clout that they can effectively write their own laws, it sounds like.
Interesting. Well, you know, and I think it's in part they have such a strong lobbying ability because of their treasury. They're able to take and devote quite a bit of money to hiring probably some pretty expensive lobbyists. Boy, that's a scary area. That whole lobbying area is scary as all get out. You look at the folks that hang out, I guess, mostly in Washington, D.C., I suppose, and, of course, down in Olympia as well. And it's kind of scary what can be done when you have enough money.
Yeah, well, do you think money is speech?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's related. I think it's all tied in together.
I think a lot of times, unfortunately, if you have enough money, it probably does equal speech. I would like to think that the rest of us have the ability of free speech, being on the radio, writing letters to the editor, doing things like that, that give us the ability to, without the insane wealth that can be behind some of the big corporations.
I just wonder if the laws can be changed so that they don't have so much clout. That's what I mean.
Boy, that's a hard one. I think we have to get into the whole lobbying issue, don't you think, Ted? In terms of, I mean, you look at different groups, even like the old Washington State Trial Lawyers, which now has a new name. They're able to lobby, and they put together money. Realtors have the PACs, I guess, that are put together, different groups. And we need to get in, I suppose, and think through the whole lobbying issue.
Well, let me take the other side of the coin here for just a minute, or the other side of the argument, Peter, and that's this. Lobbyists do fulfill a very important role in our legislative process, because a legislator cannot be an expert in every area of the law in which they're expected to vote, nor do we give them a big enough staff to be able to research the plethora of issues and bills that come through the legislature. So
yeah, you've gotten off my question. It's about corporations, not lobbyists.
Well, but lobbyists are the spokesmen oftentimes for corporations.
Yeah, but people need lobbyists too. I mean, you're talking about lobbyists only for one powerful side and not the other side.
Yeah.
Well, but in most issues, there's a lobbyist representing one side and a lobbyist representing the other.
I don't agree. They're not equal.
Well, they may not be equal, but they often are on both sides. And the other thing is this. Almost every aspect of our community has some kind of a lobbyist in the legislature.
Right.
For example, the AARP has their lobbyists down there representing senior citizens. The school teachers have the lobbyists down there representing them.
But I think your question, though, should a corporation be treated as another person, is a really tough one. And
people,
I think
corporations don't die, but people die.
Right. No, that's true.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah. That's really true. And the corporation changes internally and continues on. Like you say, it's perpetual, essentially.
Well, anyway, I think we should change a few laws.
Yeah, no, fair, really good comment. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
And appreciate the time. We're going to be taking more of your calls. What is the number, Ted, before we have to slip out?
The number is 1-866-485-1590.
And we'll be taking your questions as we continue this week's edition of Legal Line.
Bob Pittman and Ted Barr. We'll be right back with more Legal Line, so don't go away.
Whoa, nice shot. They teach you that move in college?
No, Dad. You taught me that move.
Speaking of moves, any thoughts on your future after college?
I want to do something that makes an impact, you know? I can make a difference. You taught me that, too.
Maybe I'm the smart one.
Ever wonder if you're making a difference? At Modern Woodmen of America, we care about the same things you do. For over 125 years, we've offered financial products and member benefits that can enrich people's lives. Modern Woodmen is a fraternal financial organization, which means we give our members a sense of belonging. We believe in working together for a better community and a better future. Isn't it time you belong to something that can make an impact?
Hi, I'm Randy Verberg, Western Washington's Regional Director for Modern Woodmen in Puyallup, Washington. Call me today at 253-770-6019.
Modern Woodmen of America.
Modern Woodmen, touching lives, securing futures.
Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr resumes on Freedom 1590. Here once again are Bob and Ted.
Hey, and we do continue with this week's edition of Legal Line. We're glad to be with you this week and every week, talking about your legal questions, and sometimes we may agree on stuff, sometimes maybe not. That's okay. That's part of life, too. And we're looking for your calls at, 1-866, let me see if I can get it, 485-1590. Hey, not bad. And, of course,
it's a breakthrough.
You know,
after 2 months on the radio, Bob has finally got it.
And, you know, we should mention to people that we are doing this before a live studio audience.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty nice crowd.
Which we only had to give out 2 cars and 30 TVs in order to get them down here.
Well, we gave them each, I forget what, well, we won't talk about that.
Hey, Bob, guess what?
Yes.
Guess what?
What is it?
We got our first tweet.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah, we're finally set up. So we're in the new millennium. We're high-tech guys.
We've been tweeted. No.
We've been emailed. We've been called, and now we've got a tweet.
Hey, this is great.
And here's the question.
All right, let's take it.
It came in from Greg, and the question is, do registered domestic partners still need a will?
Oh, what a good question. You know, we have this fairly new and revised Registered Domestic Partnership Act here in Washington. And what it does is it tries to put registered domestic partners on a pretty even keel with married couples. And so you can do things like community property agreements between a registered domestic partner, between partners. You can do all kinds of stuff. And you pick up all the intestate succession laws, meaning if you don't have a will, for instance, if a husband and wife do not have a will, husband dies, most of the time, the assets are going to shift over to the surviving spouse, the wife in that case. If we have registered domestic partners, same thing is going to happen. So if it is community property, for example, which you can have between registered domestic partners, things will go in accordance with the intestate succession laws. Now, having said that, it's always better to decide where you want your stuff to go, and so everybody should have a will. Almost everybody. I guess if you're 18 and have zero in your accounts and
no children, no assets,
maybe you get away with that.
Parents are still alive, so it would go to them if that's where you wanted to go. Then you don't. But any other thing, any other situation, you do.
And even in the setting where you really don't have a whole lot, if there's going to be a probate, it's a much simpler probate if you have a will that says there's no bond required. Because getting a bond, you know, is kind of a pain. I don't know if you've ever had to go through that. Not for on the criminal
end. Only when I was incarcerated.
Okay. Well, that's right. I signed for that, didn't I?
That's why I love you. You and Lacey O'Malley are my best friends.
Yeah, I remember. And Lacey said, you know, what happens if you don't repay this, Bob? And I said, no, I'm not going to find out. I will get that paid.
And that's when Bob said, no speaking English. Hey, well, let me follow up on Greg's question. He said, do registered partners still need a will?
Yes.
And you said yes. Okay.
I think they should have one. They could, yeah.
Yeah, based on their circumstances, if they have adopted a child or if they have assets. But what about other documents do registered partners need, like a durable power of attorney or a directive to physician? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, good question. And what happens is the registered domestic partner will essentially step into the shoes of a spouse in terms of Washington law. So healthcare decisions could be made by the registered domestic partner, and they actually get a little card that's issued by the, I think it's the Secretary of State's office, because that's where registrations occur. But it's always better to say in a regular, like for healthcare decisions, a healthcare power of attorney, durable power of attorney for healthcare, say who you want to make those decisions, even if it is your registered domestic partner or your spouse, and then who's the backup, because both of you could be out of commission, or maybe your registered domestic partner is down in Mexico having a really good time and doesn't want to come back to just consent to surgery for you.
Or you know what I've seen? This is why it's so important to have a backup on the as a power of attorney.
Yes.
Sometimes husband and wife or domestic partners are riding in a car together,
yes,
and they're in a car accident they're simultaneously.
Right, both out of commission.
So you need the backup. But here's the other thing. Beyond just a health care durable power of attorney, if you have a general durable power of attorney, then if the person is incapacitated,
right,
okay, say it's you.
Right.
And then your wife,
right,
she can not only do the health care stuff, but she could transact your family business.
That's right. She could be taking care of all the things that require my signature. And let's say, you know, for instance, you know, she could be right now, as we speak, because she does have my power of attorney, she could be selling her house right now.
But if it's a durable power of attorney, doesn't it only come into effect if you're incapacitated?
No, no, that's a springing durable power of attorney that springs to life if, for instance, two doctors certify that you're out of commission or Bob is really eccentric and off the charts. So, but those are kind of a pain because that means you got to go grab, for instance, usually two doctors, and getting two doctors to agree on anything these days is really tough, and getting them to sign a statement saying you're out of commission. And so most of us tend to like the idea of an immediately effective, durable general power of attorney, but then you are trusting the person to not be selling the house while you're just at the radio station.
So you have to have a lot of trust and confidence
Absolutely.
In that person. Okay,
Absolutely.
So Greg asked about domestic partners. They need a will if they have a child or if they have significant assets. They need a durable power of attorney,
right,
just in case of a cataclysmic event.
Healthcare
and financial. And what about a directive to physicians?
The ever popular living will. Remember Terry Schiavo? And, of course, Ted is too young to remember Nancy Cruzan and Karen Ann Quinlan. But Karen Ann Quinlan, remember from years ago, brought us our Natural Death Act back in the late 70s. Because she was on that respirator, if I remember correctly, and went and went and went, and she really was gone. And so all these issues have come up to help us to leave good instructions. You know, what do you want done if you're in a vegetative state? What do you want done if there is just no hope of recovery, and all we're doing is we're just keeping you kind of mechanically going through all of our life support kind of stuff, but you're really not home anymore?
I have one more question for you in this area.
Sure.
How often should you update your will, durable power of attorney directed to physicians?
Good.
Because I got to tell you, Bob, I have those things.
Yeah.
I haven't updated them in like 20 years.
Well, we've got a little dust meter that we give people, and they go home and they check the dust meter on the documents. And if the meter comes up in the red zone, then they got to come in. That's a hard one. If something major happens in your life, you've got to review the documents. But otherwise, about every 4, 5, 6 years, you really should be doing kind of a comprehensive review of everything. You'll be surprised what you find in documents sometimes, especially when they get to be 10, 15, 20 years old, and you're saying, oh, yeah, I think I remember that person.
Well, it's possible that the person who you made your power of attorney has died or has moved out of the country, moved out of your life, or that you've lost trust in them.
Absolutely.
And so maybe you need to change that person.
That's right. And, you know, one of the other things is are beneficiary designations, and you get into real trouble when it's employer-related. So let's say you've...
Are you talking about like on life insurance?
Yeah, life insurance. Let's say you work for a company, and the company provides $500,000 of life insurance benefit. This is company-provided, covered under what we call ERISA. And let's say that you have either named your third wife back or third husband back or maybe mom or something from a long time ago. Well, even though you've gotten divorced from, you know, your two or three marriages forward now, if you've left that ex-spouse on your ERISA-covered plan, guess what happens when you die?
They still get it.
Yeah.
What about on ordinary life insurance? Let's say I take out a life insurance policy, married to wife number one, forget about the policy, get divorced 10 years later, marry wife number two, and wife number one is still the beneficiary on the old life insurance policy.
Nope.
What happens?
No,
nope.
Because of the divorce, we get out the big legal eraser. You've seen it down at the courthouse, I know. You haven't been able to touch it, allowed to touch it, but I know you've seen it. The legal eraser is gotten out, and we erase that spouse's name from regular old life insurance that you might be buying on your own, but not the ERISA plans.
Okay, so the ERISA employer plan, no, but on a regular life insurance product,
but
she's removed as the beneficiary. And then who becomes the beneficiary?
It just ends up going to the estate, which is the worst place for it to go, almost the worst place.
So you
need to update your beneficiary designations on things like IRAs, 401ks, retirement plans. All of that stuff should be reviewed. Now, that I would say review that each year, but certainly every 4 or 5 years.
What about naming an alternate beneficiary on your life insurance?
You could. And
like
that,
maybe one of your children.
Sure, and that would help. Usually would help. Now, the only thing about it, let's say we name a 16-year-old kid as the contingent beneficiary. The good news is they won't actually get a check at 16. What do you suppose the bad news is?
They
get a check for the whole thing at age 18. Now, is 18 safe for anybody to inherit anything other than maybe bus fare?
No, but isn't the solution to that to have the estate the beneficiary and then set up a trust under the estate?
Better would be a trust. Now, if you set the trust up under the will, you can name the trustee of trust established by will. If you use a revocable living trust, you name the revocable living trust.
Okay, lots you're getting over my head there, but that's exactly why you need to consult with an estate planning attorney. But I think
very
we kind of hit the high points of Greg's question. That was an excellent question.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a minute we're going to take our break, but after that we're going to come back because we have another DUI question from Ken.
Very good.
And we want to answer that certainly before the holidays are upon
absolutely.
Us when we know the emphasis squads are out there. So remember, we've still got a little while left in the program. We want to see you in on the Daniels gift card. 1-866-485-1590, or you can email us questions@legallinetalk.com or Twitter just @LegallineTalk. We make this so easy for people to reach us.
It's great, and the new website stopped by. It's getting going, but it looks good. It looks good. LegallineTalk.com. And as time goes on, we're going to have much more on our website. Right here on Legal Line as we continue. This is Bob Pittman. I'm here with Ted Barr.
We're taking your calls at 1-866-485-1590. More of Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr coming up. Now, back to Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr here on Freedom 1590.
And we continue with this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman here with my co-host Ted Barr. We're hanging out with you on a Saturday once again. And be sure to check out the podcast version of the program because it'll be available too. And you can listen like endlessly. You can put it in an endless loop. I know that's what Ted does. Endless loop, and just it's always on.
It's so challenging this time of year for me, Bob, because as you know, I spend a good part of my day driving from court to court, and it's a real hard decision. Do I want to listen to Chris Isaak's best holiday tunes or Bob and Ted on Legal Line? A lot of it depends upon whether I want to stay awake or not. If I want to fall asleep on the freeway, I listen to Bob and Ted's Legal Line replay.
That's painful.
Hey, you know, this Twitter thing is really working out. I don't know how it works. I don't understand it. I just see it on the screen. And we got another question. I said that it was from Kim, but it's actually from somebody named Steve. I was still learning to read the screen here, Bob. But he said,
all right.
I had a DUI and I took a deferred prosecution.
Okay.
A friend told me I couldn't go to Canada. Is that true?
Oh. Now, what's a deferred prosecution, Ted?
I was hoping you were going to ask that question. A deferred prosecution is essentially where the prosecutor says, look, we're not going to prosecute you for 5 years. So no loss of license, no jail, no big fine. What's the catch? The catch is the program is designed for people who have serious drug or alcohol problems. Normally, they're a repeat offender. We usually don't see a deferred prosecution for a first-time offender, but sometimes it's done, unfortunately. But for people who, you know, really have the disease, really want to get well, need a little extra incentive to do it, because it benefits the community if people recover from alcoholism or drug addiction.
It
so
sure
they
does.
Aren't reoffending. So the legislature, in order to motivate those people, created this thing called the deferred prosecution, where, like I said, they're not prosecuted for 5 years. Their case is sort of put on hold. Now, during that five-year period, total abstinence from any alcohol or non-prescribed drugs, no further criminal law violations.
Now, wait 1 second. Total abstinence, I mean totally all the time.
Zero tolerance.
Okay.
Any alcohol and non-prescribed drugs. And by non-prescribed drugs, well, in the biz that I'm in, we frequently call them recreational drugs. Marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, heroin, things like that.
Okay, we're not talking aspirin or Tylenol.
No, over-the-counter is fine, and prescribed drugs are fine. Okay, so total abstinence from non-prescribed drugs, total abstinence from alcohol, no criminal law violations. Now, that's not like an infraction, like a speeding ticket. That would be like hit and run, reckless assault, things like that. They have to participate in a minimum of a 2-year alcohol drug treatment program. Those programs start out pretty intense. The first 6 weeks, it's like 4 times a week. The next 6 weeks, it's like once a week, and then after that, it's like once a month. But for the entire 5 years, they're under the jurisdiction of the court. For the entire 5 years, they have a probation officer keeping an eye on them. For the entire 5 years, they have to go to a minimum of 2 AAs documented every week.
Wow.
They are subject to random UAs. And breath tests, that is, urine analysis and breath tests to make sure they're not using. If they comply with all of that, then after 2 years, they're done with their treatment, but they still have to continue with their AA meetings. At the end of 5 years, if they've done all of that, then the case is dismissed, their license hasn't been suspended, and they haven't had SR-22 insurance, which is high-risk insurance, and they didn't go to jail. And they can honestly say they haven't been convicted of a crime.
Okay, so there's been no conviction at
right.
that point.
But if they screw up, if they don't go to the classes, if they get another criminal law violation, if they get caught using, then they get thrown out of the program. They've given up their right to go to trial, so the prosecutor doesn't have to go through a whole trial to get a conviction. Essentially, they plead guilty.
I see.
And the judge will then sentence them. And in my experience, sometimes more harshly than they would have been sentenced before, because they had a chance and they blew it.
Right.
In addition to that, even if you successfully complete a deferred prosecution, if you get another DUI within the next 7 years, that even successfully completed deferred prosecution counts as a strike.
I see.
So you would be in a much higher sentencing category second time around. These are difficult programs to successfully complete.
I mean, it sounds difficult for anybody to try to lead that kind of an existence and attend all those meetings and comply with all those rules.
But if it's
long.
Your second or third offense and you're looking at 6 months to a year in jail,
right.
or, you know, you really, your life is falling apart, your spouse or partner is leaving you, you're losing your job, your health is failing, and you really are sincere about getting your life turned around, then it's extra incentive. So that's what a deferred prosecution is. Some people in society feel that they shouldn't be in existence. Others feel, as I do, that it's a fantastic program.
I think it's a great idea to have that available. It sounds really hard to complete, but I like the fact that we have it available.
The recidivism rate, it can be high, but a lot of it depends upon how good a treatment program you're in, you know, what agency you're at. We're going to talk about that down the road, too, how you determine what's a good agency and what isn't. But to answer Steve's question, In Canada, DUIs are felonies.
Yeah, it's a serious problem.
Yeah,
even trying to cross the border.
Yeah,
right.
And remember, the Canadians, they set the conditions under which Americans or others can cross in. And Canada has a very, very high, you might say a low tolerance rate, a high bar to clear. So if you've been convicted of a DUI or you have done a deferred prosecution, then you can be banned from Canada.
Really?
Now, that it's kind of hard to say how long.
Right.
You know, typically it's 5 years. I've seen it as much as 10. I've seen the rules loosened, like when the Winter Games are up in Canada.
Sure.
And they want everybody to come in. It's controlled by the border guards,
right,
essentially. But I think anybody who, you know, owns property or likes to go up there to Whistler, to ski,
sure,
or does business in Canada, needs to be very careful about drinking and driving.
Right.
Because if you get a DUI, or even if you do a deferred prosecution and successfully complete it, it can keep you banned from Canada. My rule of thumb is don't plan on going up there for 5 years.
Right. Now, that's interesting because I could understand the conviction part, but not the deferred prosecution. So hopefully we'll talk about more DUI work as we proceed along through the holiday period. That was a great question, by the
way. It
was. We've got a lot of good questions.
Who do you think should get the gift card this week?
Oh, man.
You know who I think?
Yep.
I think some of the questions were great, but I think it should go to our first caller, Steve, because obviously he's loyal. He's listened in 2 weeks. He's phoned in 2 weeks.
I'm okay with that one. I think I agree with you on that.
All right, so we're going to send the Daniels $50 gift card to Steve. But we thank everybody else for twitting, emailing, and phoning in, and we hope you'll do that in the coming week as well.
Absolutely.
What are we going to talk about next week?
Hey, legal issues surrounding the holidays, especially relating to child custody. Boy, that's a big issue. Parenting plans, sharing, visitation, you know, being good to each other. Be sure to listen in if you've either you or maybe a friend has been involved in a situation where you are no longer living together as parents, and you're trying to, that's a tough job, trying to parent when you're not together and the kids are sometimes pawns. And
especially during the holidays.
I think that's so tough, and we want to really talk about that. It'll be good.
Well, and one of our panel attorneys, who we refer to often for additional information that feeds it to us, Catherine Fields, is going to be sending us some information on parenting plans over the holidays. We want to thank you for tuning in, and Bob and I will be back at the same place, same station, next Saturday from 10 to 11.
Same audience, actually?
Well, we hope so, and we want to encourage you to visit our our new website at www.legalline.com.
And remember, there are no stupid legal questions, only stupid legal mistakes that you can make by not knowing the law or listening to us. No.
That's right.
You don't make them if you listen to us, right?
We are attorneys, full-time practicing attorneys. Bob Pittman and Ted Barr, Legal Line, Freedom Radio, 1590 on your AM dial.
Visit Bob's website, bobpittman.com. That's Bob Pittman with two T's, .com. If you'd like to contact Bob, his email is bob@bobpittman.com. If you'd like to contact Ted, his email is ted@tedcbarr. That's with two R's, .com. The opinions expressed on the preceding program were not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of this station. Join us again next Saturday morning at 10 for more Legal Line with Bob Pittman and Ted Barr. Sponsored by Modern Woodmen of America and Regional Director for Western Washington, Randy Verberg, here on Freedom 1590.